Once outside the tent, Anya took a moment to check her surroundings. There didn't seem to be anyone else about. Even if she hadn't seen the gunman, that in itself would have been unusual. People were always moving about the camp.
Get down now! Everyone on your stomachs! Hands over your heads, dammit! Get down, I say! I'm not shitting about!
Now that she was outside, and the tent walls were no longer acting as a sound baffle, she could hear voices coming from the center of the camp. She cautiously made her way in that direction, slipping in and out between the tents rather than walking openly down the main path. As she drew closer to the center of camp, she crouched down beside one of the tents and peered around the corner. From where she crouched, she could see that most of the dig team had been herded into the open area in front of the mess tent. Craig stood alone in front of the group, facing a bearded man in dark fatigues who was pointing a pistol at Craig's head. Behind the newcomer were several more men, all dressed the same way and all holding firearms of their own, pointing them indiscriminately at the rest of the dig team. Anya recognized the guns as MP5s, the stubby machine pistols that in recent years had become the weapons of choice for more than a few special operations units across the world. They were effective little things, capable of firing 800 rounds per minute on full auto. If the armed men opened fire, the archaeologists would be cut down in seconds. Craig glared at the men in front of him.
What do you want?
The leader looked past Craig as if he didn't matter and addressed his words to the rest of the dig team huddled behind him.
I'm looking for a necklace. A black one. Surrender it now and there won't be any trouble.
Anya couldn't believe what she was hearing. How did they know about the torque? Craig hadn't even reported it to the trustees from Oxford overseeing the dig yet. Never mind to anyone else. Craig stepped forward, causing the gunman to turn his attention back to him.
I don't know what anyone has told you, but we haven't uncovered anything of value here. There's no gold, no treasure. Certainly nothing to make you rich.
I want the torque. We can do it the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. I don't really care. Now where is it?
There was a look in the gunman's eyes that Anya didn't like. Almost as if he was eager for a confrontation.
Tell him, Craig. Tell him what he wants to know.
I don't know what you were talking about.
That's too bad. Ah!
The shot took Craig in the forehead, knocking him over backward. The rest of the dig team stared in stunned horror at the body in front of them. The gunman seemed to drink in their fear and terror like a fine wine. A slow smile spilled across his face as he watched them stare at the dead body in front of them.
Okay, now that we've established that I'm not screwing around, I'll ask again. Where is the torque?
The need to charge out and avenge her friend screamed through Anya's bones, but she fought the urge back down, running out into the open and confronting the mercenary leader, for that is what she guessed them to be, mercenaries, would only get her killed. If she was going to get the rest of the team out of this alive, she would need all her wits about her. She slipped slowly backward until she was out of sight behind the nearest tent, and then reached into the otherware. The sword appeared in her hand, fully formed and ready for use, the hilt fitting her palm as if it had been made for her and her alone. Her life hadn't been the same since that fateful day when she'd brought the broken, scattered pieces of the sword together again for the first time since their original owner, Joan of Arc, burned at the stake centuries earlier. The sword miraculously reformed in a flash of power right before her, and in some strange way she still didn't quite understand, chose her to be its next bearer. Her own innate sense of justice seemed amplified when she carried the sword, and she'd found herself forced into any number of situations from which others would have simply walked away. Numbers didn't matter, nor did the odds, only that she acted whenever possible to defend those who couldn't defend themselves. Like now. Despite knowing that they would never get there in time, Anya pulled out her BlackBerry with her free hand and placed an emergency call to the regional police.
This is Anya Creed with the Oxford University dig team in the Midlands Bog. We are under armed attack. One dead already. Send help immediately to my phone coordinates.
As she slipped the phone back into her pocket, her fingers touched the torque. Something told her that it wouldn't be safe there. If she was caught, her captors would find it in seconds. She took it out of her pocket and slipped it inside her sports bra instead. That way, at least it would pass a casual search.
Then she took a moment to consider her next move. Clearly, she couldn't take them all on at once. But if she could even up the odds a bit, she'd have a better chance of succeeding in the end. With that in mind, she faded back into the shadows, waiting for her chance at vengeance.
Shut up, you! Get your butt down! You keep your hands up! I'm not playing with you!
The gunman ordered his men to herd the rest of the dig workers into the mess tent behind them. And as they began doing so, Anya slipped around behind it and found a place to crouch down out of sight near one of the windows. From this position, she could see and hear most of what was going on inside the tent, while potentially being ready to do something to help if an opportunity presented itself. The lead mercenary stood facing the group, his gun still in hand.
Where's Professor Novik?
No one would look at one another for fear of giving Novik away. After what had happened to Dr. Stevens, it didn't take too much imagination to figure out what was likely to happen to Paolo. For a moment, Anya didn't see him, and she began to hope that he had slipped away in the initial confusion.
I am Novik.
Anya watched as Paolo stepped forward.
You come with me.
The man turned and faced the two guards who had entered the tent with him.
If they try to escape, kill them.
Paolo and the mercenary leader walked out of the tent, leaving the entire workforce guarded by only two men. This was her chance. Anya slipped over to the corner of the tent and peered around it. From where she crouched, she could see other guards moving around the camp, hunting through the tents, apparently searching for the torque. She thanked her intuition for making her grab it at the last moment. At least that would keep it out of their hands for now. If she didn't call undue attention to herself, she should be able to make it to the entrance and slip inside the tent without anyone on the outside being any wiser. She released her sword back into the otherwear and did just that. The guards had their backs to her as she strode inside. Anya was able to cross most of the distance to them before one of her co-workers whirled in surprise.
Anya!
The guards whirled around, reaching for the guns they'd let hang free on the straps around their necks.
Whoa!
Anya didn't give the others time to think about what had just happened. She rushed over to the rear wall of the tent, snatching a knife off a nearby table.
Quickly, this way.
Slicing downward with all her strength, she cut a big gash in the fabric.
Run for the woods and get as far away as you can.
What about Dr. Novik?
I'll get him. When you're free, call the local police. Hurry!
As they filed out the rear of the tent into the growing darkness, Anya headed in the opposite direction. If they were going to have any chance of getting away, she had to create a diversion. She summoned her sword. Suddenly, the tent flap pulled back, and Anya found herself staring down the barrel of a gun held in the lead mercenary's hand. She reacted on instinct and threw herself to the side. The darkness claimed her before she even hit the ground. Several hours later, after Jackson's group eliminated the dig team and disposed of the bodies in the bog, the mercenary found himself standing in the foyer of Shaw's private estate, waiting for an audience with his employer. He'd been working for Shaw long enough to know that while he disliked incompetence, he hated those who shirked personal responsibility even more. Jackson stood a better chance of coming through this alive if he delivered his report in person, as backward as that might seem. Surviving the next 15 minutes was something he very much wanted to do. Motion at the head of the stairs caught his attention, and he stood straighter as he saw his employer come into sight. Shaw was still dressed. That was a good sign. That meant Jackson hadn't had the misfortune of waking him from one of his infrequent periods of sleep. In the back of his head, Jackson rated his chances of getting through this 5% higher than he had a moment before. But only 5.
Do you have my property, Mr. Jackson?
Nothing to do but play it straight.
No, sir.
That, obviously, wasn't the answer Shaw had been expecting to hear. Jackson watched as a series of expressions crossed the other man's face, everything from surprise to distaste. But thankfully, outright anger wasn't yet one of them. Knock that percentage up a few more notches.
Pray tell me why not.
Like the good soldier that he was, Jackson laid out the events of earlier that evening in clear, concise sentences.
Shaw didn't say a word until Jackson got to the part about the woman and the sword.
She actually attacked you with a sword.
Jackson couldn't tell if Shaw didn't believe him, or if he found the whole situation as weird as it sounded. Jackson settled on the latter.
Yes, sir. While I'm no expert on medieval weaponry, if I had to hazard a guess, I'd say it was an English longsword. Perhaps something they uncovered in the dig.
What did you do with this woman?
I shot her, sir.
Dead?
Jackson thought about the way the woman's body flopped when they'd tossed it into the bog with the rest of them.
Yes, sir.
Though, now that he thought about it, he didn't know what had happened to the sword.
A pity. Might have been an interesting conversation there. Go on.
Apparently the woman called the regional police before attacking our men.
Jackson went on to explain how he tricked the helicopter flyover that responded to the call for help, after which he and his team searched both the camp and the bodies of the dead, but could not find the torque anywhere.
Perhaps they packed it up and sent it back to Oxford before we arrived.
Jackson found himself casting about for some reason, some excuse, why he was standing there empty-handed. He was not a man accustomed to failure, and he particularly didn't like the way this assignment turned out. It was always the easy ones.
Give me your assessment of the police response.
They have to send a team out to the site this morning, sir. It's standard operating procedure. They'd have done it so tonight if they'd had anyone reasonably close. The fact that the site is in the middle of nowhere played to our advantage.
I want you on the ground with that regional police unit when it arrives in the morning. If the torque turns up, I expect you to do what is necessary to recover it. Are we clear?
Jackson nodded. There was a reason he knew so much about the regional police. He'd been on the active duty roster for the past 7 years, ever since mustering out of the regiment. He'd expected Shaw to give that very order, and had already made sure that he'd be assigned to the duty in the morning. With dawn only a few hours away, it meant even less sleep than he'd expected to get, but beggars can't be choosers. He was just happy to have escaped his employer's wrath.
I want that torque, Mr. Jackson.
Understood, sir.
Good enough.
Shaw turned and headed back up the stairs, but stopped before he'd gotten more than a few steps away. He turned to face Jackson once more.
This woman, the one with the sword, do we know who she was?
An American archaeologist named Anya Creed.
Jackson took a photo out of the file folder in his hands and passed it to Shaw. The picture had been taken on site and showed Anya's still and bloody face. The other man stared at it for a few seconds, then passed it back.
She was a pretty thing, wasn't she?
Anya came to with a start. She was on her back, staring up into the sky. Light was just starting to peek over the horizon, which meant she had been out for several hours, maybe more. Her head hurt something fierce. A wave of dizziness threatened to return her to the darkness. She closed her eyes, gritted her teeth, and fought it off. The ground beneath her rolled gently, reminding her of how it felt to drift on an inflatable raft in a swimming pool. But in her pain and confusion, she didn't pay it any mind, until she tried to sit up. She put her hands down flat on either side, barely registering the cold, clammy feel of whatever she'd placed them upon, and tried to lever herself into an upright position. When she did, the surface she was laying on shifted dramatically beneath her. In her surprise, she panicked, flailing her limbs, feeling the muck pulling at her, dragging her down. Then her feet hit the bottom. She planted her feet firmly beneath her and stood up straight. She gasped in a lungful of air and then breathed a sigh of relief when she realized that the muck only came to her waist. Her relief was short-lived, however. As she looked around, the dim morning light revealed that she was standing in the middle of an active bog, surrounded by the partially submerged corpses of her former colleagues. What had happened the night before came rushing back. The sudden appearance of armed intruders at the dig site, the demands to surrender the torque, the deadly gunfire when the archaeologists refused to do as requested, and her own struggle to get as many of her fellow scholars to safety in spite of it all. The last thing she remembered was staring down the barrel of a gun and her last-ditch effort to get out of the way of the bullet. Her head throbbed, a not-so-subtle reminder that she apparently hadn't moved quickly enough. She brought a hand up toward the side of her head, wanting to know just how bad the wound might be. but stopped herself when she saw the thick coating the peat bog had left on her limbs. There was already enough of it dripping from her head. Rubbing it deeper into an open wound didn't seem like a bright idea.
Oh.
Despite the early hour, it was already light enough for Anya to see the bullet wounds and dark splotches of blood that stained the bodies around her.
Oh no.
She recognized Paolo Novik from his curly gray hair. The bright yellow of an NAU sweatshirt identified another body as that of Sheila James, one of the graduate students who'd come overseas just last week. There was Matthew Blake and Dalton Ribisi.
Oh.
Several of the dead lay with their eyes open, staring into nothingness. Anya turned away, shaking off the despair that threatened to overwhelm her. Knowing how close she'd come to her own death, and seeing the deaths of others she cared about, set a red-hot fire burning in her veins. A careful look around showed her that the shortest route to solid ground was directly behind her, where thick tufts of grass grew along the bank. But when she tried to move in that direction, she discovered a new problem. Her feet had sunk into the thicker silt at the bottom of the bog and were now trapped. Visions of being sucked down beneath the surface swam in her mind and caused her to try pulling her feet free with brute force, yanking upward first on one and then the other. Rather than loosening the bog's hold, however, all her actions managed to do was to get her feet to sink deeper. She was stuck. Anya opened her mouth, intending to call out, but stopped herself. While other survivors might be within earshot, so too might the very men who slaughtered her friends. She was a proverbial sitting duck. She was going to have to get out of this on her own. Anya considered the situation. She knew she had to work with the bog's natural qualities rather than against them if she hoped to get out of this alive. She slowly began to wiggle her left foot gently, rocking it back and forth. Each time she did so, it let a little more of the water within the bog slide beneath her foot and the thicker particles of peat that kept it trapped. Gradually, she was able to loosen the bog's hold on her foot. After several minutes, she was able to work her feet loose enough that she could lift them when the time came. With her feet free, she had to fight the urge to lean forward, to power through the muck with big strokes of her strong arms. For she knew that doing so was exactly the wrong thing to do, and would only leave her trapped again, perhaps in an even more precarious position. She knew the surface of the bog would support her if she let it. The corpses floating around her were proof of that. With that in mind, she leaned backward instead of forward, letting her head and upper back come in contact with the surface of the bog. When she felt its chill wetness lapping at her skin, she lifted her legs and spread her arms wide, allowing the bog to bear her weight. It worked. She floated on the surface, and if she held still, an observer wouldn't have been able to tell the difference between her and any of the other dozen corpses surrounding her.
Now comes the hard part.
Solid ground was only 15, maybe 20 feet away. But if she moved too quickly, she'd sink and wind up trapped all over again.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Using the nearest corpse as a lever, she pushed it firmly toward her feet. The act sent her own body gliding across the surface of the water, taking her a foot or two closer to the bank and what she hoped was solid ground. Little by little, she made her way to safety. Once Anya had her heart rate under control, she sat back on her haunches and thought about her next move. The sun was up now, its thin light breaking through the trees around her. She guessed it might be 6 or 7 in the morning, 11 or 12 hours since the attack.
If the killers are at the camp or not, it doesn't matter. I still need to go there.
She stood and did what she could to wipe off the worst of the muck from the bog, which wasn't much. She purposely left the wound on her head alone. No sense messing with it until she had some way of cleaning it properly. When she finished, she reached inside her sports bra and retrieved the torque from where she'd stashed it the night before. She had a bit of a bruise from where it had pressed against her tender flesh, but the torque itself was no worse for the wear.
Of course not. It made it through 2,000 years in a bog. Thank goodness the killers didn't find it.
With the torch in hand, her chances of discovering what this was all about, as well as who was behind it all, went up considerably. It also told her that the killers, whoever they'd been, made mistakes. They should have searched the bodies before dumping them into the bog.
But then, if they'd done their job properly, they'd have found me still alive and taken the torch. I'll be thankful for small blessings.
She stuffed the torch back into its hiding place. Anya spent a few minutes searching through the tall grass at the edge of the bog until she found the trail the killers used to get there. The added weight of the bodies they carried pushed their footsteps deep into the soil.
No trouble following this back to camp.
Her first order of business was going to be dry clothes. After that, she would figure out a more solid game plan. The authorities had to be notified, the bodies recovered from the bog. But before any of that happened, she wanted a few minutes alone with whatever evidence the killers left behind at the scene. It wasn't that she didn't trust the police to do their job. She just wasn't going to leave justice in the hands of someone who might not care as strongly as she did about seeing it served up properly.
Oh.
Craig's smiling face flashed in her mind.
Whoever did this will pay.
As the telltale flashes of color that marked the camp's tents became visible through the trees, Anya slowed down. It wouldn't do to just blunder into the middle of camp, particularly if the killers were still hanging about. She stopped and listened instead. Aside from the calls of a few morning birds, no other sound reached her ears. While that didn't mean the perpetrators were gone, it was certainly a good sign. Still, it wouldn't hurt to be armed. Sword in hand, she cautiously moved forward. The camp had been ransacked. Several of the tents had been torn down entirely, while the contents of the others were strewn about, left to lie where they had fallen during what Anya assumed was the search for the torch. She slipped from one piece of cover to another for the first several minutes, leery of suddenly running into any of the men she encountered the night before. But eventually she realized that the camp was deserted. The killers, whoever they had been, had fled. Her free hand touched the torch through her shirt.
What is so important about this thing that someone would kill to possess it?
The entire attack just didn't make sense. While she knew that there was a burgeoning trade in black market artifacts, she wouldn't expect a piece like the torch to be of particular interest.
We only dug it up yesterday, for heaven's sake.
Anya realized that the only way information could have gotten out about the torch was for someone on the dig team to relay word of the find to the outside world, which meant one of the people she'd been working with for the past 2 days was responsible for the deaths of more than 30 others. She would find out who was responsible for this and bring them to justice, no matter what.
Of course.
Anya came to her own tent and discovered, not surprisingly, that it hadn't escaped the attention of the intruders. She picked up her clothes from where they'd been scattered about and pieced together a clean outfit. With her clean clothes and wearing 2 pairs of socks to make a pair of boots she found in another tent fit, Anya felt slightly better. She turned her attention to the rest of her belongings. Her iPod and BlackBerry were gone, more than likely snagged by one of the intruders. But she found her wallet, camera, and laptop computer tossed into a corner.
Oh, man.
The computer screen had been smashed, what was left of it still bearing the muddy impression of the boot that did the deed.
Come on.
A few minutes with a screwdriver she scrounged from elsewhere allowed her to recover the hard drive that contained all her notes from the work done to date. Even better, the camera looked undamaged. That was the first good news of the day. With the data on the drive and the torch in hand, she had a much better chance of identifying it. Once she did that, she could narrow the list of individuals who might have been interested enough in it to kill to possess it. Anya stepped out of the tent, carrying a scrounged backpack with bottled water. She needed to hike back to the staging area where she left her rental car. It wasn't a bad hike, she knew, but it would get hot soon. She would need the water. Anya stopped at a faint sound. She turned in a slow circle, trying to pinpoint the sound. Though she couldn't see it yet, she knew it was a helicopter, and it wouldn't be long before it got to camp. If she could flag it down, she could get the authorities on site quickly before the elements had a chance to destroy too much of the evidence. She glanced around, looking through the personal belongings scattered about the camp until she spied a bright red sweatshirt, then ran over and picked it up. It should be colorful enough to catch the attention of anyone looking her way, she thought. She could see the helicopter now, moving in her general direction. Most of the body was black, with the section directly under the rotors painted a bright yellow, a color scheme she recognized as belonging to local law enforcement. She began waving her arms over her head, the red sweatshirt held aloft in one hand, doing what she could to attract the pilot's attention.
Wait a minute.
She had that feeling again, that sense that something was terribly wrong. And ever since taking up the sword, she'd learned to listen to such things. The helicopter altered course slightly, now headed directly toward the camp. And that sense of impending disaster rose up inside her like a wave about to break. She had to get out of sight, and she had to do it now. Anya didn't stop to think. She turned and ran between the nearest two tents, getting out of sight as quickly as possible. Once behind the tent she'd been standing in front of, she circled around to her left, dashing between several others until she found a place where she could watch the helicopter without being in the open. The helicopter began its descent, the rotors whipping up a gale that tossed clothing and camp supplies about indiscriminately. Anya was forced to shield her eyes from the dust and dirt kicked up in its wake. The aircraft settled to the ground in the center of the camp. Doors on both sides slid open, and men wearing the uniforms of the regional police force climbed out. For a moment, Anya thought everything was going to be all right. That feeling of foreboding must have been for something else. The police were here. She could breathe a sigh of relief and turn the investigation over to the professionals for the time being, at least until she'd had a chance to rest and get a better understanding of just why someone would kill to possess the torque. But as she moved to leave her hiding place, to call out to the police officers fanning out through the camp, her gaze fell on one of the men at the back of the pack. The last time she'd seen him, he tried to put a bullet in her skull. Damn! He was dressed just like one of the regional police officers, and from the easy way that he interacted with the rest of them, it was clear he wasn't a stranger.
What on earth is going on?
One thing was certain. Any hope of getting help from these men was gone. With the killer an accepted member of their group, she couldn't trust that they wouldn't shoot her on sight. Quickly and quietly, she eased her way back from the tents and then slipped into the trees behind them, heading deeper into the woods. The car was a beat-up old four-door Renault, blue-gray in color. Anya, hot and tired from a half-day hike through the marshes and over hills, sat gratefully in the front seat, letting the wind from the open window wash over her. She was down to her tank top and bra over her pants. Her hair hung loose, dancing in the wind. The driver looked to be in his early 30s, with thick blonde hair that didn't seem to want to stay where he put it, and a tentative smile on his face that told her stopping for a hitchhiker, and a pretty one at that, was outside his usual behavior.
Car trouble?
Boyfriend trouble. The SOB dumped me on the side of the road 3 miles back.
As the words left her mouth, Anya saw the Roman collar about his throat and took in the uniform-like black shirt and pants he was wearing.
You're a priest?
She didn't quite know why she was surprised. For a second, she even felt guilty about the t-shirt. But then again, whatever.
Is that a problem for you?
Not at all. It's a relief, in fact. You can never be too careful nowadays.
Another vehicle came roaring around the corner ahead of them, headed in the other direction, back the way she had come. It was a late model Mercedes, black with silver trim, and Anya sat up to the windshield to watch it go past. The windows were all tinted, so she couldn't see inside it, but she felt a chill pass over her as it sped by. In that moment, she was thankful that she hadn't been on the road alone when the vehicle had appeared.
Big car in a big hurry, often seems the case. I'm Gary, by the way, Father Gary Anderson.
Thank you for the ride, Father. I'm Amy.
The less the good father knows, the better.
Father Gary must have been eager for company, for he barely let her get a word in edgewise, and she soon found herself listening with half an ear. He was a newly ordained Catholic priest working out of the Church of St. Ignatius, a small parish about 20 miles outside of London. He was returning from a clerical conference and was happy to take Anya to the parish rectory, where she could call a cab to take her the rest of the way into the city.
I imagined what ministry would be like, but my goodness, truth truly is stranger than fiction.
Gary was pleasant company, and Anya found herself relaxing as he told her funny stories about the parishioners he'd met in his first few months at the church. That proved to be fortuitous, for when the growl of a heavy engine came roaring up behind them, Anya noticed. She looked back just in time to see the Mercedes they'd passed 20 minutes earlier closing on them rapidly. It didn't look like the driver had any intention of stopping.
Something wrong?
You might want to hold on.
Anya braced herself against the dashboard with both arms. A look of confusion crossed Gary's face.
But what's wrong?
The priest eased up on the gas as the realization that there was a problem filtered into his consciousness. Anya risked a quick look back and saw that the Mercedes was just a few feet off their bumper and closing quickly. It didn't take a genius to figure out that whoever they were probably with the same group that attacked the dig site. She didn't know how they'd known to look for her on the road, if in fact that was what they were doing. But at the moment, the how didn't really matter all that much. They had, and now she had to deal with it.
Don't slow down, go faster!
But what's wrong?
Gary's foot slipped farther off the gas. The big black automobile leaped forward and slammed into the back of the Renault, sending it skidding across the road as Gary fought to control the wheel.
What the hell?
The young pastor glanced back at the behemoth closing in again from behind. Anya reached over and shoved her hand down on his knee, forcing his foot down on the accelerator.
I said faster!
The Renault bucked and jerked beneath them, not used to having so much demand put on its aging engine. Father Gary glanced back and forth between her and the rearview mirror.
No. What do they want?
At a guess, I'd say they want to run us off the road.
Anya's gaze flit around the inside of the car, looking for something she could use as a weapon. Mystical swords just weren't all that useful when you were tearing down a country road at 60 miles an hour, trying to get away from the killer Mercedes behind you.
Why would they want to do that? Uh-oh. Hold on.
He jerked the wheel to the right, avoiding the sudden rush by the vehicle behind them as it tried to ram the back of their car. Anya gritted her teeth.
I have no idea.
She opened the glove box in front of her and began digging around in it.
What are you doing?
Looking for a gun.
I'm a priest, for heaven's sake. Do I look like the kind of guy who carries a gun?
Giving up on the glove box, Anya turned and glanced into the back seat. Her gaze fell on the two large cardboard boxes on the floor behind them.
What's in the boxes?
Hymnals!
Oh, for heavens!
Anya suddenly had an idea. She scrambled between the seats and fell into the back, being sure to keep below the level of the rear window as she did so. Anya looked inside the nearest of the boxes and found it filled with dozens of thick, leather-bound volumes.
Yeah, these will do nicely.
She pulled a few hymnals into her lap, then turned around, positioning herself behind the driver's seat, but still staying out of sight of the men in the other car.
Oh, what are you doing?
Giving them something else to think about. Hold it steady and let them get close.
Are you insane?
He kept the car steady. She waited, letting the Mercedes get closer, as the other car surged forward, closing the gap between them. Anya suddenly sat up and whipped her arm out the window, sending the heavy leather hymnal in her hand flying directly at the windshield of the Mercedes. The book struck the center of the windshield, starring the glass. The Mercedes went careering across the road as the driver fought to regain control, the outer wheels actually leaving the pavement and bouncing through the scrub brush at the side of the road.
Go, Amy!
Gary pumped his fist in the air, but his joy was short-lived as the other car pulled back onto the road and raced up behind them again. This time, Anya didn't wait for them to get close, but began flinging hymnals out the window as fast as she could. The big car swerved to avoid the first few, and then hung back far enough that Anya couldn't reach them with the next. The whole time, Gary kept the pedal to the metal and raced down the center of the road without saying a word. Anya figured he was either praying that they didn't encounter another car coming the other way, or cursing his luck for stopping for her in the first place. Maybe a little of both. They drove another mile down the road before the men in the Mercedes decided to change the game. Anya was sitting up in the back, a hymnal in hand, ready to throw it, when the man in the passenger seat stuck his arm out the window and pointed a gun at them.
Oh, hell. They're about to start shooting at us!
Gary started swerving the car back and forth across the road.
Oh, protect us, Lord. Send your angels to surround us. Send us your mercy and love.
The second shot missed, but not by much. Anya knew it was a matter of time before one of those bullets struck either her or Gary, and if that happened, it was all over for both of them. Gary kept swerving.
Think, Anya, think!
It seemed that their only choice was to bring the attack to the enemy. The trick was going to be convincing Gary of the necessity.
Oh! We've got to do something!
Gary, this is what we're gonna do. You're gonna ease up a bit, line up the left rear corner of your car in the middle of the Mercedes grill. Then when they get close enough, slam on the brakes.
What? Can't we just pull over and give them what they want?
They want to kill us, Gary. Just do what I said.
At her suggestion, Gary eased up on the gas slightly. Not enough to be obvious, but just enough to let the Mercedes close the gap between them a little bit. Anya watched and waited. When the time was right...
Now!
Anya was on the hood of the Mercedes before the airbags deflated. The passenger tried to bring his weapon to bear. The sword passed through the shattered glass of the Mercedes windshield and into the throat of the passenger. As Anya pulled her sword free and turned to face the driver, she discovered that the crash had already done her work for her. The other man's head hung on his chest at an odd angle. The impact, or possibly the airbag, had snapped his neck.
Where on earth did you get a sword?
Anya turned, wondering how she was going to explain this. Something must have shown on her face, though, some vestige of the hardness that came over her during combat, for Gary took one look at her and backed away quickly, his hands raised in front of him.
I don't even want to know. I don't know who you are or what you're really doing here, and right now I think that's for the best. I'm going to chalk it up to the Lord working in mysterious ways and leave it at that.
Anya could only stand there, mouth open in shock, as the young priest climbed back behind the wheel of his battered old Renault, threw it into drive, and after tearing free of the Mercedes wreck, drove off down the road as fast as the remains of his car would allow. It was only after he was out of sight that it occurred to her that she could have claimed to be an angel of vengeance, complete with a holy sword, and he probably would have believed her. She'd have to file that excuse away for next time. Anya released the sword, letting it disappear back into the otherware. They hadn't seen another car in more than an hour, but that didn't mean that one wasn't on its way. It would be just her luck to have the local constabulary come driving along at this point, catching her in the act, so to speak, so she didn't waste any time. She dragged the bodies out of the car and laid them on the side of the road, hidden from immediate view by the bulk of the Mercedes itself. A quick check of their pockets didn't turn up any identification.
Oh, that figures.
The clothes were off the rack items with all the labels removed. Clearly, the two men were professionals. She found the same tattoo on each man, a red hand. The tattoo obviously meant something, but she had no idea what that could be. She assumed the driver must have been on his way to the dig site to rendezvous with the others, and it was just her luck that he happened to see her as she sat up to watch them go by. Both men were carrying pistols, 9mm automatics, but Anya left them where they were. She was going to have to talk to the police at some point, and she didn't want to have guns tying her to a roadside assault, never mind the deaths of two men, when she did. A quick search of the car turned up nothing of interest. The car was registered to a Mr. Steve Jones, which Anya knew was a fake without even having to check on it. These guys had taken the time to wipe out the obvious clues to their identities. They sure as heck weren't going to be driving around in a car registered in their own names. It was a fair guess that the license plates had been stolen from another vehicle, too. Still, she memorized the numbers just in case. Having found everything she thought she was going to find, Anya considered her options. It probably wasn't going to be long before the priest decided calling the cops might be the best thing after all, if he hadn't done so already. Given the investigation that was already underway at the dig site, she suspected they'd respond pretty quickly when he reported armed gunmen trying to run him off the road. He'd no doubt report the vehicle they'd been driving as well. Still, she had to get back to London. The Mercedes was the only way. She managed to get the wreck to the edge of London before it gave up its automotive soul.
Great. Just great. It looked like she was going to have to hitch another ride or go the rest of the way on foot.
Yes, sirree, Bob, I think I'm going to get a little holiday, do some digging with friends.
Ugh.
Next time I want to dig, I'm planting tulip bulbs.
She reached back in the car and used the edge of her t-shirt to wipe down the steering wheel and any of the other places she thought she might have touched since getting inside. She didn't want the police connecting her to the car or the two dead men who'd been driving it before her. She made sure to wipe off the door handle, too, before kicking it shut.
German engineering.
Night had fallen an hour or so earlier, so Anya found herself standing on the side of the road in a run-down section of town. Traffic was minimal, and after watching several cars drive past, it was obvious no one was going to be inclined to stop in this area. Maybe they would in the bright light of day, but after dark was a different story. Still, that might work to her advantage. She'd been worried about the police finding the car, but in an area like this, the car might not be there long enough for the police to find it, especially if she left it unlocked with the keys in it. She tossed the keys through the shattered windshield onto the front seat, grabbed her pack out of the back, and walked down the street. A few miles down the road, she came to a rundown motel, the kind of place that would let her pay cash without leaving a name at the front, and wouldn't say a word about the bloodstains on her shirt. Noting that the elevator was out of order, Anya deliberately took a room on the fifth floor. Without the easy access the elevator would provide, the fifth floor was high enough to discourage all but the most determined of human predators. The casual thief didn't want to deal with climbing five flights of stairs when there were easier pickings elsewhere. She used the cash she'd taken from the driver of the Mercedes and paid for two nights in advance. There really wasn't much to the place. A bed, a beat-up old dresser, and a small nightstand were the only pieces of furniture in the room. There was a small safe set into one wall, but the scratches around the lock plate let her know just how safe it wasn't. Rather than risk putting the torque in that, she began looking for a place she could hide it for a little while. Her first thought was to tape it inside the toilet tank, but one look at it told her that opening it might require a hazmat suit followed by a week of detox, so that was out. She dismissed the air conditioning vent for the simple reason that too many Hollywood movies had used it as part of their plots. It would be the first place someone looked, whether they were conscious of the association or not. Inside the ceiling tiles was out for the same reason. Then her gaze fell on the thin piece of baseboard that ran around the perimeter of the room. A few pieces here and there were coming free from the wall, and she could see a narrow space behind them.
That'll have to do.
With the help of a hanger from the closet, Anya managed to pry one of the sections of baseboard free from the wall without damaging it or the nails that held it in place.
Yeah.
Whoever hung the wallboard cut corners and didn't take it all the way to the floor, leaving a 2-inch gap, a gap just large enough to hide the torque. Once she had it in place, she replaced the baseboard and carefully pushed the nails back into place. Standing, she backed off a few steps and gave it a once-over.
I think it'll work.
Satisfied for the time being that the torque was in a safe place, or at least as safe as she could make it, she stripped off her clothes and took a quick shower. Under the spray of the water, she took time to clean out the wound on her head, discovering as she did so that it wasn't all that bad. It had just bled a lot, as scalp wounds are wont to do. She picked up her clothes and scrubbed them in cold water. A few minutes of effort got most of the bloodstains out. There were a couple of small spots here and there.
They're not too noticeable. I'll buy something new the first chance I get anyway.
Her chores done, she collapsed onto the bed, pulling the sheet up over her. Within moments, sleep had claimed her for the night. As Anya fell into bed in a London hotel room, Detective Inspector Ian Beresford was arriving at the dig site outside Arkholm. The local authorities had just completed the difficult task of freeing the bodies of the deceased from the waters of the bog, then transporting them back to the main camp for examination. The mess tent had been commandeered for the task. Large tarps lay across the dirt floor, the bodies carefully placed on the tarps in neat, orderly rows.
A thorough mess.
Standing just inside the entrance, Beresford watched as teams of forensic personnel moved among the dead, photographing the bodies, cataloging personal belongings, and trying to identify just who they were. This was complicated by both the predations of the local wildlife and the fact that some of the bodies had been in the water for more than 24 hours. A 20-year veteran of the Metropolitan Police Authority, Beresford had transferred to the Counterterrorism Command inside Special Operations just a few years before. In that short time, he'd made a name for himself, cracking some high-profile cases and making the department look good, despite the fact that he had little to no interest in personal aggrandizement or celebrity. Beresford liked the intellectual challenge of solving high-profile crimes, and he was good at it. That was all he needed to be a reasonably happy man.
Where to start? Where to start?
That was why Home Office had roused him in the middle of the night and sent him to supervise the investigation when the territorial police hollered for help. There was only one problem.
Who cares where to start? What the bloody hell am I doing here?
As far as he could tell, this had absolutely nothing to do with his primary mission, namely bringing to justice those engaged in terrorism, acts of domestic extremism, and other related offenses. He'd had a chance to review the initial report filed by his sister agency and recognized that it was more than likely going to be a political nightmare for the department. Among the presumed dead were a well-respected professor from Oxford, a dozen or more graduate students from the same university, a handful of foreign nationals, and the host of a wildly popular cable television show from the United States. It would be a three-ring circus for whoever had to coordinate all of the inquiries from the foreign police departments, but just because there were foreign nationals involved didn't necessitate calling in CT command. So far, it was still just a homicide case. A homicide with multiple and, in some cases, high-profile victims, but a homicide just the same.
Stop whining and get to work.
Knowing the techs had at least another hour, maybe more, before they could give him anything worthwhile, Beresford left them to their work and stepped back out into the night air. His assistant, Clements, was waiting.
Well, what are the locals saying?
To be frank, no one really has a clue. A million different theories, but nothing worth hanging a hat on.
That was to be expected. If they knew what had happened, they wouldn't have called him in the first place.
All right. Give me the most likely scenario as you see it.
Right.
Clements took a moment to gather his thoughts. The two had only been working together for a few weeks, and Clements was constantly, but unnecessarily, trying to prove himself to Beresford.
Majority vote among the first responders, as well as our own people, is that it started out as a robbery and went wrong somehow. Rather than keeping their cool, the perps reacted before thinking it through, and in the process, hiked the charge against them from robbery to multiple felony homicide.
Beresford had been thinking the same thing. The black market in antiquities was alive and well, even here in merry old England. If the dig team uncovered something seriously valuable, it wasn't beyond comprehension that someone else would take it into their heads to relieve them of their find.
Seems a logical place to start. Take me to wherever they were storing the artifacts they uncovered.
Clements led him to a trio of tents a short distance away. Like the mess tent, these were bigger than the others, capable of holding several dozen people at once. The scene that greeted them as they entered the first of the tents was anything but organized. The tables had been overturned, the carefully cataloged objects scattered about the floor like so much trash. Mixed in with the pieces of pottery, clothing, and various Iron Age weapons were several pieces of gold jewelry, and even a large gold-plated cup that reminded Beresford of the chalice he'd drunk from at church last Sunday. He stood in the entrance, taking it all in. He nodded casually to Clements.
Does it make any sense to you that our would-be thieves would ransack the place looking for items of value and then leave the gold lying there on the ground in plain sight?
Clements frowned and then shook his head.
No.
Me either. That means we can probably rule out simple theft as our motive here.
Maybe whatever they took was worth so much that they could ignore the smaller pieces?
Beresford thought about that for a minute.
No.
How do you mean?
If you were a thief, would you leave any of the gold behind?
Clements didn't bother to answer. He knew the other man was right.
So, if they didn't kill all those people over money, what did they kill them for?
That's why we're here. Because I don't know.
Clements. All right.
Beresford could see by the expression on Clements' face that something had just changed with regard to the case.
Tell me we've been reassigned and I'll buy you lunch for the next month.
Clements grinned, but his heart wasn't in it.
Sorry. We're stuck with this one, it seems.
Bloody hell. Give me a good shoe bomber any day. All right, then. What was the call about?
We've got two more bodies. And this time, it looks like we've got a couple of the bad guys.